Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Wine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now, let me ask you a question. This is for my listeners. Have you ever thought about writing your memoir? I know a lot of us think about it, but very few of us actually sit down and do it. Can you imagine what it would be like to write about your life from a child's point of view? Have you ever wanted to know why it is so difficult to grow up poor and not even know it? Now would you like to learn what happens when your dad is 60 years old when you are born? Wow, he would be more like your grandfather. Tell me, have you ever heard of a book called The Boy on Shady Grove Road, A Childhood of the 1940s and 50s in the South? Now would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to start thinking about sharing your own amazing journey? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I'll be introducing you to a new co-host on the show. He is an author, and he has a lot of great stories to share with us. He will provide us with information, inspiration, and some really, really great advice about life and living. I'm pleased to announce that the show is now live on Talk4Media, and it is syndicated on 6 networks with over 4.5 million listeners to date. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no-wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, get some cheese and crackers, and enjoy our show. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. He has published his memoirs, The Boy on Shady Grove Road, which is a collection of 100 stories from his early years in the conservative, segregated South of the 1940s and 50s. His book captures life on a little farm that was financially poor but rich in love, adventure, and imagination. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today again my co-host Clyde McCauley. Hi Clyde, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, January. Glad to see you again and glad to talk to your audience.
Oh, I'm happy to have you back. I just, you know, I love to start my shows out and check on the weather reports. How's the weather in your area? I know your area had a pretty terrific snowstorm recently.
Yeah, we live in Portland, Maine, and right now outside it's been sunny all day, but yesterday it snowed all day, and we get that quite a bit here, so it's quite different from when I was raised as a kid down in Arkansas when snow was really exciting, once in a great while it was snow, but yeah. We have it almost too often here, but fortunately we live in a condo, so you know, I don't have to shovel and mow lawn and all that like I used to. So.
Oh, that's good. That's interesting that a boy who was raised in the South would end up in Maine. Of course, you spent quite a bit of your time in the Northeast, haven't you?
Well, actually, when I left home when I was about 14 and went to live with an older sister in Tennessee. And since then, I have really never lived in Arkansas. I've gone back for the summers. I used to go back and spend the summers with my parents. But I went to, then I started going, when I went to college, went to the University of Oklahoma and started going out from Arkansas at that point and teaching college. And really, I've never lived in Arkansas since I was 14.
Okay.
But I still have a little bit, still have a little accent, they say.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, I guess maybe you do. it's interesting, the journey that you have taken. I had the pleasure of reading your book this past weekend. My husband and I were traveling, and he's the driver, and I'm the co-pilot, and I'm the reader. So I got to read your whole book. I was very touched by it. I loved it. It made me laugh. It truly brought tears to my eyes. There were so many sweet, sweet stories that you share in your book. Now, what prompted you to write this book, and how long did it take?
Well, it took me about probably a year and a half or so once I actually started doing it. Kenny, the boy that's my partner all through the book, was actually my nephew, and we'll talk a little more about that later. But he was only 3 years younger than me, and he died about 3 years ago. And at that point, it really hit me that I needed to start putting down these many little stories that I told my own kids about, I told family about, he and I had shared together. And so I started writing about 3 years ago. I met with a woman that professor that was retired, a writing professor, and she was kind of my tutor.
Oh, wonderful. Well, your book is a saga of Americana, and it reminds me of a lot of the books that Mark Twain wrote, with that kind of the interesting stories, the fabulous characters. And also, I must say that one of the pages that brought tears to my eyes was at the end when I realized that Kenny was no longer here. He had been such an amazing part of your life. So he was 3 years younger than you. So his mother was your older sister?
Yes, his mother was my older sister. She was probably 15 when I was born. And she left the home pretty soon. My two older brothers left at the same time. They were very poor, and the two older boys went to the service. And my sister got married to a fellow she met that was 15 years older than her and had a baby, Kenny. And so that was who I was raised with. They lived right next door to us, just down, you know, down the dirt road a little ways. And so he was really like my brother to me, yes. Okay. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that you mentioned Mark Twain. I've got some really wonderful reviews on Amazon from the book, and I've had two or three people mention that reminded them of Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. I have one woman from Canada that wrote to me that the books remind her of even Harper Lee, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird and Carson McCullers and even Truman Capote. They were all Southern writers. Now, I don't claim to be in that list at all, but she was very nice that she mentioned them too in her review. She's actually writing a review for Amazon to put on, and she sent me a copy of it yesterday.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm going to work on my review, too, because I finished your book. And I feel it's a high compliment to even have your name mentioned in the same sentence with people like that, and especially Mark Twain. Now,
Yes, it pleases me. Pleases me very much.
I'm sure it would. I love when my name is mentioned in the same sentence with Irma Bombeck. You know,
that's right. Yes.
Thrills me.
That's right.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your parents. Your father was 60 years old when you were born. What was that like, and how old was your mom?
Well, sorry, my mom was 40 years old when I was born. Now, naturally, she wasn't 60, or that wouldn't have worked, but she was 40. and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a few minutes as we go into the book a bit. But my dad was 60. And they thought they were through having kids. The last one before me was 8 years older than me. So I think I was a little surprise package to everybody whenever I came along. And but it was interesting because my dad was like my grandpa in a way. In fact, the kids at school all thought that he was my grandfather. And they'd say, you know, something about your granddaddy this and your granddaddy that. And it was a little different. He he had a little trouble chasing me around the yard whenever I was naughty or whatever, because I could always outrun him. And
well, you know, it's an interesting, as I was interested in that part of your story, because my husband, he was born when both of his parents were 45 years old. Oh. He had one sister 8 years older and another sister who was 16 years older than him. So it was actually like he had three mothers. Did you feel that way with your brothers and sisters?
Yes, almost, because my oldest brother is 19 years older than me when I was born. And then there was one 17 years older, and then my sister Lucy, which was Kenny's mother, and she was 15 years older. So she was kind of like my second mother in a way. She bossed me around quite a bit, as though she was my mother. And then my two older sisters, they were both kind of in high school and just getting in high school when I was born. So they took good care of me, and everybody claimed I was spoiled. I'm sure I was not. Being the sixth kid, you would never be spoiled, would you?
No. Well, you know, I don't know about that, because my husband was the third kid, and he definitely was spoiled rotten. However, he turned out to be as wonderful a man as his father and as wonderful as you are. Now, share with us a little bit about this name, Shady Grove Road. How did it get that name? Tell us about the street or the road you lived on.
Well, excuse me. The Shady Grove Road was it was a dirt road. The gravel road was the main one that went from Benton up to Congo. Congo was about 8 miles up in the country, and it was basically just a little village up there with a large mercantile store, and from the place that we got all of our groceries, because they delivered them to you in a big truck. But the road that we lived on was just a little dirt road, and it went from the main highway down that went from Benton to Little Rock, and it came up past our house. Uh-huh. And everybody lived on it, and most of the people that lived on it were poor, like us. And there were a few that were not as poor as we. But the road went past our house, and people just called it Shady Grove Road. And the reason they called it this was because there was a little shop, a tourist-type shop, down at the end of the road, right on the Little Rock Highway. It was called Shady Grove, the little Shady Grove Gift Shop, is what I'm trying to say. Grove Gift Shop. And so they had all kind of, you remember the old chenille bedspreads they used to hang on the lines? I don't know if you ever traveled down south, but they were all over the south. Chenille bedspreads, they would hang out on the lines every day for people to stop by. And they had all kinds of other things in those bird ornaments out, or the bird big glass balls that set in these bird feeder or bird baths type things, I should say, out in front. And they had all kinds of trinkets and a big sign out front that said cold drinks. Now, cold drinks was very important, because that meant like Coca-Cola and all that type thing. And if you're in the South, you're always looking for a cold drink. And so I remember they had a big container that had cold water in it. And you reach down in you'd lift up the lid, the Coca-Cola big box, and you lift up the lid and take out a Coke, and they'd dry it off for you and open it, and that's where you would drink it. But it also had a sign up that said, if you can't stop, honk as you go by. And there was a lot of honking that went. So I'm sure the Shady Grove Road was Shady Grove Gift Shop was really liked, because a lot of people did do a lot of honking. But it was because of this funky little gift shop, junky little gift shop, that that gave our road its name. Shady Grove Road. It wasn't on the map like that. It was just a number on the county map. But it should have been on there. It should have been Shady Grove Road, should have been named. It was a road that I was born on, and it should have been on the county map. But it was
How many neighbors did you have, Clyde?
Well, the neighbors were all probably a quarter mile apart. We were not close like you would be in town. Yeah. You know, we would have to walk a little ways over the hill to Fricky Johnson's house, and my friend James, and the other way to the Felton's house, and the other way to the Culver's house. And so we had to get on our bikes and ride to most of these places. They were not really close by. Nobody close like you would in town.
Right. Okay. Well, this is a fascinating introduction to a wonderful road in the South. And we're going to also have a fascinating introduction to our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about why Clyde wrote his book from a child's point of view with an adult voice. We'll be right back.
Okay.
The Boy on Shady Grove Road explores a humble but adventurous childhood in rural Arkansas during the 1940s and 50s. Clyde McCulley's juvenile innocence and sense of wonder capture universal mysteries and dreams of childhood, while coming to terms with family, friends, and faith in the segregated South. With wit and heartfelt gratitude, The Boy on Shady Grove Road ponders the most basic questions while celebrating the warmth of belonging, the joys of freedom, and the simple pleasures of life. Available on Amazon and StoryNightPress.com. January's co-host, Connie Cockrell, the author of Mystery at the Fair, has been writing since 2011 after a challenge from her daughter. An eclectic writer, she's written mysteries, sci-fi, fantasy, and even a thriller. She has been included in four different anthologies and published on the e-zine Everyday Fiction. Connie continues to write and entertain with whatever comes into her head. You can find her books on most ebook retail sites. Paperback editions are also available. Be sure to visit her at www.conniesrandomthoughts.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter at Connie Cockrell. Rachel Carson wrote, "Spring now comes unheralded by the return of the birds, and the early mornings are strangely silent where once they were filled with birdsong. Little did she know the movement she began would lead to the destruction she envisaged, announcing the release of John Graves' new book, Broken Wing, Birds, Blades, and Broken Promises. Today's wind turbines kill millions of birds, require backup power plants, are harmful or deadly to humans, have enormous costs. There are alternative wind turbine choices. The wealthiest benefit from wind. We pay higher prices. The story is conservation, the environment."
Welcome back to January Jones Sharing Success Stories, and I'm visiting with my delightful guest today, Clyde McCulley. He was born in Benton, Arkansas in 1941, so he's really a lot older than me.
Yeah.
He was the last of six kids born to a father who was 60 years old and his mother was 40. Together, they tried to eke out a living on a five-acre farm with no running water and a two-holer outhouse. He was determined to go to college and pursue fine art, ultimately leading him to complete both an MFA and a doctorate in higher education administration. After working as a professor of art at several private colleges, Clyde spent 20 years as the director of the School of Art at Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute in Utica, New York. And his book, The Boy on Shady Grove Road, is a book that I've just finished reading. It will make you laugh. It will make you cry. It is a fabulous book. Now, Clyde, there were so many interesting characters in your book. I could not believe all these people. It was like unbelievable. Let's start off by you sharing with our listeners the main characters. Let's start off briefly talking about your mama and daddy.
Okay. My daddy was a short little man. He was bald. He didn't smile much. In fact, he kind of always had a downturned smile, I called it. He dipped snuff, and some people did in those days. He did smoke cigars now and then, but he basically dipped snuff, which my mother didn't like, but he did it. And he loved pork, which my mother didn't eat, which I'll tell you a little bit about later. And he loved grease. Now, here's what's interesting.
Grease.
He would have grease. He loved my mother would, of course, Southern women in those days would cook their food to death, as they called it. Put it a lot of, my mother always put shortening in the vegetable shortening and things, but she would have her fry a pork chop for him, and then he would pour the grease from the skillet over the top of the the pork chop on the plate and then sop the grease up with a biscuit. And here's what's interesting. He lived till he was 83, never had a heart attack, never had anything wrong with him I knew of except a little arthritis in his fingers. And, you know, he did everything you weren't supposed to do. He was a Democrat. he always helped with the elections. He wouldn't vote for a Republican if he had to. And and he loved to read paperback Westerns. And he cursed like a sailor.
What a match for your mom, who from the book I kind of got the feeling she was a bit different.
Yes, you're talking about two. They talk in Bible something about do not be unequally yoked. Well, they were as about unequally yoked as you could be. My mama, on the other hand, she was taller than my daddy. She was skinny, and she loved to cook her food to death, as I mentioned before. And she also used a lot of grease in her cooking, as a lot of Southern women did. But she was the head deaconess in the church. That meant that she was the one that kind of looked after all the things that the you did behind the scenes in the church and so forth. And she always paid a faithful tithe. She was, I will talk a little bit more in a few minutes about that, the way that she joined the Adventist church that my Aunt Ola belonged to. But,
it's interesting that she would tithe, even though you were a very poor family, it was still something that was very important for her to do, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. When I was about 6 years old or so, when I started school, she went to work in town for cleaning houses and cooking for people. And she would make $15 a week. And the first $1.50 came out before she did anything. And she put that in the drawer to pay her tithe when she went to church. And that was very important to her. Yes, she always did it. But she also loved soap operas. So every afternoon, she would try to be sure and do something in the house around 4 o'clock when Stella Dallas, there was a famous soap opera called Stella Dallas, and would come on, and she always try to iron clothes or something like that about 4 o'clock. Now, Kenny was the other one. Kenny was 3 years younger than me, my nephew, but we grew up like brothers. He was he mostly did what I had said for him to do. I was like the big brother. We were great pals, and he was raised just down the road from me. My daddy gave my sister and her husband, Kenny's daddy, a small piece of property on the corner of our little 5 acres, and they built a small house there. And Kenny liked just about everything I did except onions. He did not like onions, and but he was my best friend, and we did a lot of wonderful things together.
The two of you had so many adventures, unbelievable adventures. And that's exactly why I said it was like Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer. The things you two did were exactly along the lines of that. I mean, you were poor and you pretty much made your own fun, didn't you?
We had to. I mean, that was it. You know, we didn't have money to do anything. It's the only money we made. Of course, there was some of our adventures were making money. We'll talk about that later in another show. But we would pick up pop bottles to do that. But we did not. Fortunately, we didn't have video games. You know, we didn't have any of that. No. So we didn't have TV. You only listened to the radio is all you had a chance, and read books. Then I'll tell you about the other people real quick.
Okay.
Uncle Judd. He's quite important in the stories because it was in his car or truck that he carried us. And when I say carried, down south, when you pick somebody up to take them to town, you carry them to town, as we would always say. So he would pick us up and carry us to church. He would carry us to town. And and he was snaggletooth. He talked a lot. He was kind of big around the belly. My daddy called him Dough Belly, which I think it meant about the – I don't think it was the money he had. He talked about mean dough, but I think it was around his belly. And half of his right hand was cut off because he slipped and ran it through one of his big saws in his sawmill.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so anyway, he was and the thing that I did enjoy with him, he would take me with him sometimes. We'd go out looking for timber, and we'd drive just along country roads, and he would look for particular trees, hickory trees and so forth, that he would like to try to talk the people out of letting him cut them down to use for his handles in his sawmill, making handles for hoes and rakes and axes and, you know, all those
things. He was kind of like the wealthy one, right?
He had money. Yeah, he had the money. Yeah. We didn't. He had money. And I think my dad was always kind of jealous of him for that.
Sure.
His wife was Aunt Ola. She was much more sophisticated than Uncle Judd. She had her teeth, or she had a good false, set of false teeth. I'm not sure which, but it was important in those days to have a good set of false teeth if you had any, because you want them not to click and clack like. But anyway, and she was bigger than my mother. She was half sister to my mother,
okay.
And but she was stricter than my mother. She'd boss me around quite a bit too as I was a kid, and but she also believed in health. This is health according to Aunt Ola. She believed in Dr. Pepper as a soda, a Coke. So she, when I would go to her house, I liked that because the commercials on Dr. Pepper said, you know, for a healthy drink, drink some at 10 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and 4 o'clock. So if I was there, she'd call me and, Clatty, it's time for Dr. Pepper. So we would have one at 10, and then we'd have one at 2, and we'd have one at 4. But they always, we got to eat graham crackers with them because Dr. Graham was the guy that came up with graham cracker, according to my aunt. This is my according to my aunt Ola. I've never read that to see if it's true or not. But
that is one of my favorite parts in your book, Dr. Pepper, Dr. Graham Crackers. Yeah. This book is something that you just have to read. You can't believe you couldn't make this stuff up. It had to be true. And, you know, we have to hear now, or we get to hear now from our wonderful sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to meet Uncle Marvin, Aunt Madeline, Aunt Lil, Johnny Johnson, and my favorite, Freaky Johnson. We'll be right back.
All right. Yes, okay.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com. The new book, God Reconsidered, Searching for the Truth in the Battle Between Atheism and Religion by Scott Smith. Explains why both militant atheists and believers in traditional religions ignore inconvenient truths. Scott argues in favor of the insights of Gnostic Christianity. Check out www.godreconsidered.com to read a sample chapter. That's godreconsidered.com. With over 30 years as a registered nurse with empathic ability, Carolyn Green, a.k.a. The Energy Nurse, is bridging the gap between traditional and alternative medicine. Certified in the areas of energy medicine, life coaching, and as a medical intuitive, she brings to each client an integrative approach to body, mind, and spirit. Her book, found on Balboa Press and Amazon, Getting to Know You, Guided Pearls of Wisdom for a More Soulful Existence, is a channeled journey for clearing the mind clutter to bring about healthier thought patterns. As a motivational speaker, Carolyn brings new light to old issues and is engaging, interactive, and enlightening. With her newly launched The Energy Nurse jewelry line, she brings to you stones and crystals that are not only beautiful to wear, but balancing and healing as well. To contact or learn more about Carolyn, go to www.theenergynurse.com.
Welcome back with my guest, Clyde McCauley, and we're talking about his fabulous book that I have just enjoyed reading just recently. The book is entitled The Boy on Shady Grove Road, A Childhood in the 1940s and 50s in the South. Now, Clyde, before we meet the rest of your family, could you share your website information and share with my listeners how they can get your wonderful book?
Yes, so will. They can go to Story Night Press, Story Night Press.com, And you can order both of our books on there. And you can also go to, I have a new site now called mamaswhitegravy.com.
Okay.
And that's going to be, when I start doing podcasting, it'll be called Mama's White Gravy. And that's and you can also register there if you'd like to get a newsletter from us. And you can also go, of course, to Amazon.com. But just go to Amazon.com and pull up Clyde McCauley, and you should find it very easily. It's been right up there at the top now for quite a while, and we're happy about that.
Oh, you should be. And I wanted to share with our listeners what a popular book it was, because when you were on the show the first time before you became my official co-host, you had offered an introductory experience so that people could download your book. And how many people responded to you, Clyde?
We had over 4,000 that responded.
Wow.
from that one show that you have. So that really shows how many people your show goes out to. I mean, this is just a small amount. You know, you're quite amazing, the amount of wonderful shows that you put on and the amount of people that you pull in. It's great.
Well, you know, it's so much fun to do this with you and share this with our listeners, because, you know, sometimes you wonder who's listening, and then you think, well, the numbers are like over 4 million listeners to date, and I think, well, I know they're not all family.
No, it better not be.
Yeah, right. But it's a fun thing to do, and it's my passion, of course, sharing other people's success stories.
Well, you did a great job.
Thank you. Let's share a little bit about Uncle Marvin and Aunt Natalie.
Okay. Uncle Marvin was, he was older than my mother. He was a half-brother, Aunt Ola's actual brother. And they lived in Memphis, Tennessee, and they would come to Arkansas every year for him to get the hot springs baths. They would go to hot springs where they had the natural thermal baths that they would run for you there, and it claimed to a lot of people to help their arthritis and so forth. He had really arthritis really badly. And he was tall. He had hair. I say hair because Uncle Judd didn't have hair. My daddy didn't have hair. So, you know, to have a man in the house with hair was kind of nice. And they would come by once every summer. And he had a hearing aid in his ear, but it was old fashioned hearing aid. And it had this twisted wire that came down outside of his shirt. And then he had a little microphone that he buttoned right into the front of his shirt so that, you know, I could stand there and talk into his little microphone. He could hear me. And but he was educated, and he was an engineer. And I remember when I got to go to his house one time, there was a little story about going to their home when I was 8 years old, and he had a wonderful train track, which I was able to see. But Uncle Marvin was wonderful. I loved him very much. However, he was married to a woman named Aunt Madeline. Uh-huh. Aunt Madeline, as you say, we call her Aunt Madeline. She was short and fat. She was educated, and she yapped like a little dog whenever she'd talk. Yap, 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 yap. And Aunt Madeline had big bosoms. And she had a mole on her chin with a black hair that stuck right out of that mole. And she would, every time she would see me, she'd pull me up and pull my nose right into those big bosoms. And my eyes were facing right into that hair on the chin. You know, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. And the mole was ugly. And I was afraid the hair was going to get in my eye. And I'd stand there acting like I liked him. Well, Aunt Madeline, it was just about more than she could take to come to our house, because we had a bucket in the kitchen that had a dipper in it. And that was the drinking water. And everybody came in the house would just go in. You'd take that long handle dipper, dip it down in the bucket, take your drink of water, put the dipper back in the bucket. Next person come along, use the same dipper. And it was just about more than Aunt Madeline could take. Okay. I'm sure she could. Well, she would use my uncle's little metal telescoping type of cup that he took to hot springs with him. And she'd take and dip it down in there as though it made any difference. But somehow or other, she felt that it did, I guess.
Yeah.
And then for our outdoor toilet, she'd bring her own toilet paper for us because she didn't like the catalogs that we used, and which is another story in itself. I got thousands of stories. But,
yeah, I know you do. The catalogs, those were the Sears Roebuck catalogs.
Well, we had both, Sears Roebuck and Montgomery Ward's.
Oh my gosh, wow. And you could read them, and then you used them as toilet paper. How practical.
Well, that's right. Well, what we actually did, we liked the Sears one better, so we would read it. We set it on the toilet to read, and we would tear the sheets out of the Montgomery Ward and use it. So Mr. Montgomery or Mr. Ward, either one, would not appreciate that. But yeah, I'm sure, yeah. But anyway, that's the way we did. So she would come by and tolerate us for a day, but she never stayed overnight. They always were there just for the day. But they would bring us lots of little gifts. They brought us ornaments to put on our Christmas tree. And our first lights that we got for a tree, she brought it. These were all always used ones that she was giving up to get new ones. But it was fine.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
So she's part of my story. And then Aunt Lil, I'm not going to mention too much about Aunt Lil right now. She was the crazy one of the family.
Okay. We could do a whole show about her.
We could. Kenny and I really didn't know anything about her until we discovered her when she was in the state hospital. They called her back then. Uh-huh. Before that, they called them insane asylums, but they were called state hospitals at the time I was growing up. And she had somehow gotten away and had gotten a ride and had come down to our house. And my mother was trying to hide her away because she didn't want my daddy to know that she was there. And she put her in a little shed. And Kenny and I didn't know she was in there. And we found her there, scared us half to death. But that's another story. I'll tell you, wait and tell you about Aunt Lil later with all her wild hair and all that kind of. And then there's my two friends. My family lived over the hill named the Johnsons. The Johnsons were poor, very poor. And but
they were poorer than you?
Much poorer than we, yes. Johnny Johnson was my best friend. He had red hair, as red as you can imagine. And we have a story one time about when we dyed it black for him, which his mother...
His mother
never did forgive me about that one. But he was my best friend. And... he was extremely poor, but I did stay over at their house a lot at night. I liked to stay over with them. And my mother would let me, and I'd go down. I'd stay Saturday nights, and we'd listen to the Grand Ole Opry on their radio because we could pull it in live from Nashville. Then we'd go out and look for squirrels early in the next morning. But those are the stories I'll get into later. Fricky Johnson was his mother. Now, Fricky is very important in my story because she...
Before we go on, spell... Fricky,
you want to wait?
So people
right.
know what you're talking about.
Okay, Fricky, F-R-I-C-K-Y, Fricky,
okay.
Fricky Johnson.
Fricky. Okay.
Yeah, let's get that straight. F-R-I-C-K-Y, Fricky Johnson.
And how did he get that name?
Well, she got that name. I don't know. I don't know how do any people out, these poor people get names? I don't know. But she was named Fricky. She was uneducated. She dipped snuff like my daddy, and she was very cross-eyed. And my daddy used to say that she was so cross-eyed that when she cried, tears ran down her back. Now, I never saw her cry, so I can't verify that. That's what my daddy always said, which is a terrible thing to say, isn't it? Whenever, you know, we were not politically correct. We were probably more... unpolitically correct than our friend Mr. Trump. But anyway.
Well, I had never heard that with tears running down her back. She was so cross-eyed. When my husband and I were traveling this past weekend, I was reading your book in the car. And when I came to that part, I said, oh, my God, I have to read this to you. Because I said, you will never believe this one. And we both had a really, really good laugh on that one. Fricky Johnson, that's a great name. I can't wait to meet all these characters when your book is made into a movie. That's something I'm looking forward to. Also, I'm looking forward to sharing our wonderful sponsors, and we'll be right back with Clyde McCauley and talk more about Fricky.
Joining January Jones as her co-host on the show is Miles Miller, the great success creator. Miles is a two-time best-selling author with books entitled Against the Grain and Successonomics. He continues to transform 100,000 people all over the world through his speaking and training. His uplifting and essential messages like Bulletproof, Time Machine, and Strength in Numbers are impacting every audience he meets. Together with January Jones, they'll explore how to be successful and what steps you can take to achieve the success you want. Visit successhq.net, leadup.biz, and learningbreaks.com. Orgasm long and prosper. Learn the secret of the one-hour orgasm. Experience the dynamic connection between extended orgasm and spirit. Enhance your bedroom skills with precise instruction in the art of ecstatic sex. Become an accomplished lover capable of sexually satisfying any partner. Men, master ejaculation control. Learn how to orgasm without coming. Cultivate sexual energy. Create a spiritual context for your lovemaking. Feel the bliss of full body, multiple orgasms. Learn how to relax in high states of arousal for extended periods. Visit www.howtoprolongsexualorgasm.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions. I'm pleased to announce that Priceless Personalities is now also available at audiblebooks.com. Today, I have a very priceless personality visiting with me, my co-host, Clyde McCauley, and we're talking about his wonderful book, The Boy on Shady Grove Road. Clyde, this book is fabulous. I adored it. As I shared earlier, I had a chance to read it, and it made me laugh. It made me cry. It has everything. Now, you've introduced us to quite a cast of characters, and these are just a few. There's many, many more in this book. When you were growing up, did all of these people in your family, it sounds like some of them had more money than your family, or was it about the same as far as financial stress?
Well, it was about the same, except that I think the main ones that had more money than us was Uncle Judd and Uncle Marvin and their families. And but the rest of us there in the community were about the same, I think. There were a few people that had more money than us. But, you know, my dad wasn't able to work anymore. He was, as I said, he was 60 when I was born, and he had gone through a hard time and had been injured when he was in the 30s. And what is interesting here, too, January, is that he had to register for both World War One and World War Two. He had to register. He had to register when he was 60 years old. Yeah, I have a copy of his registration form. So men, you know, even 60 years old had to register for World War Two. That's how important that war was. It's hard for us to sometimes believe that. But he wasn't able to make really money. You know.
Did he ever have to serve in the military, even though he had to register?
No, you know, I don't know how he got serving in World War One, because he was born 15 years after Abraham Lincoln died. And so he saw the automobile come into existence. He saw the airplane come into existence, all of those things. And World War One was what, 1914 or something like that. So, you know, he would, of course, at that time he was probably born in 81. So, you know, he's probably 25 years old or so. So maybe he was too old. I don't know. But to my knowledge, he never entered the war.
Okay. Now, your parents and you had five brothers and sisters. They left a nice home in Memphis, and they moved to Arkansas. Why did this happen? How did it happen?
Well, my dad worked for the Otis Elevator Company. And during the 30s, of course, they laid up a lot of people off with the Depression and so forth. And I don't really know. I never really heard exactly what happened, but he had saved up quite a bit of money. They had a nice home, a nice car. They, you know, had nice furniture. And then his savings went down. And finally they decided they had to do something, because they were going to all start starving to death in Memphis. So my Aunt Ola and Uncle Judd had moved to Arkansas. And so they told them they should come over there and follow them. So they did go do that and moved up to a little community called Congo. And, then, of course, I was then a couple of years later, they moved down to where I was born. I was born in my mom and daddy's bed in our little four-room house. You know, no hallway or anything. You just came into the living room, through a doorway into the kitchen, through a doorway into the bedroom, and had to go through one bedroom to get to the second bedroom. So when I was born, my brothers, being as old as they were very upset with my dad that my mother had become pregnant, because somehow or other, it was all his fault, I guess, in their mind. And so, anyway, they were quite angry at him, and because they said there's simply not enough money to go around. We, you know, we don't have enough money to feed all these mouths. So anyway, they both, my one older brother, 17, he joined the Marine Corps. My other brother was still about, 19. My other brother was 17 and just barely was able to get into the Navy. And he was, didn't weigh enough. So the story goes that he told me that he went down and ate about 5 pounds of bananas just before he went over to register and barely made himself heavy enough to be accepted. And then,
when your brothers left, did they send money home to help? Or
Yes. Thank goodness for that, because every month they would get when they would get paid, they would send money home to help mom and daddy feed myself and the two girls. Of course, my sister Lucy, she saw what was happening too, and she left too. And so there were just the four of us to feed. But yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what families do. I mean, that's the touching part of your story. It's all about people who are in it together, and they're dealing with poverty. And so many people now talk about people who are struggling, but you want to talk struggle. You need to read this book, because this book is, you lay it all out there. You're as honest and can be, and you are such a fascinating writer.
Thank you.
I'm so pleased to have you with us, and I want to share with our listeners that we've just begun with Clyde. He's going to be with us, and he's going to be here twice a month. He'll be back live on the 23rd. All of our shows, of course, are archived for your listening pleasure. Clyde, thank you, and I'm looking forward to your next visit, dear.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it, too. Thank you so much.
To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed meeting Clyde, my new co-host, as much as I've enjoyed sharing him with you. My upcoming guests are exciting, eclectic, and very energizing, just like Clyde. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful, too. Welcome to our No Whining World. Sign on to my website, januaryjones.com. You know, we really love sharing our stories, our struggles, and especially our secrets for success. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, my dear friends, stop whining, start smiling, and then share our show with everyone you know. If that doesn't work, then you can start eating chocolate, lots of chocolate, because Valentine's Day is coming soon. Thank you to my co-host today, Clyde McCauley. This is January Jones, thanking you for joining me today on my journey, and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Serantos.
This is Serantos, and you're listening to January Jones.
Would be so easy.
is Sorantos. I hope you enjoyed January Jones' latest episode.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.